come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, dear listener. We appreciate you listening to this episode. We've got at least a couple hundred of them already on file on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and more. Click the subscribe or like button. That helps us out and helps spread the word of the Saturday Night Freak Show to all the corners of the globe.
Like a disease.
Listen to them all. Collect them. Share them with their friends.
There you go. Every Saturday night, we watch a movie, then we sit around the bar and talk about it for your listening pleasure. And these are the internet radio superstars who will bring it to you.
Sean.
Holly.
Travis.
And I'm Colin. And I want to tell you that we've added something special to this episode. Uh-oh. For the next four episodes, since there's four of us, at the end of each episode, after our wrap-ups, we're going to do, I have my fingers out, there are four on the finger, we're going to do our favorite, our best. Favorite.
I don't know.
Favorite.
It's got to be favorite.
We've been talking about this for a couple weeks, and this has been a debate for a couple weeks.
Because what do you do?
Well, I guess maybe everybody does their own. Yeah.
Right.
So maybe everybody makes their own decision.
Yeah.
Because then we'll just sit here ridiculing each other. Like, that's not the best. You're full of shit.
That's definitely not the best.
We can't do that.
So just favorite. So
it's just be an argument. Right, it's got to be favorite.
All right, so tonight we're going to find out, because it is October, as we're going into Halloween month. So Travis, who chose tonight's movie, is going to tell us his favorite horror movies after we review his movie.
Top 10? This is the other part that we've been arguing about. Is it top 10?
Top 10.
Top 5?
Top 10.
Better be top 10. Okay. I can't remember 10 or 15, or I'll just throw a bunch out there.
He's just going to talk until we say stop.
Yeah, we'll be like, and then this one, and then that. Oh, that one's good.
Number 42 was a toss-up.
So what was the movie that we watched tonight, Travis?
We watched The Bad Seed from 1956.
56.
Directed by...
Mervyn LeRoy,
whatever. In this movie, it's LeRoy.
It looks like it's spelled LeRoy.
Or what's the first name?
Mervyn.
Mervyn, yeah.
Mervyn?
Your name is Mervyn?
That's crazy.
And right. There's a character Mervyn. Named Leroy? Leroy?
There is a character there named Leroy. Character. This is, it is based on a book by a guy named William March. That I want to say the book was written in 1954. So, I mean, this thing kind of rose to...
Well, the play also came out in 1954.
Oh, really? Very so maybe good. The book is a little earlier than
that.
No,
it was 1954.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So this is like right on.
Everything must have been a hit.
Yeah.
It's like, great book, let's make a play.
So here's my question for you, Travis, if you know the answer to this. I'm going to assume one way, but maybe you know. So the phrase bad seed, does it begin with this book? Is that where it entered the popular lexicon?
I think so. I can't necessarily say. I mean, later in the review, I'll get down to what I think the political aspects of this movie are, but I don't think this necessarily... coined the phrase bad seed.
No, it may have actually come from like,
I was like that's
psychology, like it kind of does in the movie. Like that's maybe all he heard this, something through research for his book.
Or I just think they're thinking of a way to, I mean, the same way an atomic monster movie simplifies, like, you know, what you see when radiation grows, you know, the bad seed is just a quick way to explain the science of this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a metaphor. There was no quick way to explain the science of this movie. That's why it was 2 hours.
Oh, dude,
long.
Like I said, read the book. Like, if you read the book, I mean, you go into the psychology of every character, every single character. Because, this movie came out, well, I can't really say, like, what it came out around. So I'll just talk necessarily.
Well, I've got a little insight into what inspired it, I suppose. According to, you know, my sources... Wikipedia. at this point in time in the 50s, there was more reported occurrences of juvenile delinquency. Apparently, like, I mean, if this had been a phenomenon, it wasn't reported
on. Well, that's why the Tales of the Crypt comics and all those things, like juvenile delinquency in the 50s was supposedly a huge thing.
Because it was a new phenomenon.
Well, it's because all those kids... their parents had money, I get, from World War II, right? These are the kids that didn't need to worry about that whole, like, the threat of war. Even though I want to say this movie takes place around the Korean War, right? Is that what the father character was kept?
If it was a contemporary story.
Something like that. Yeah. I'm not sure when the Korean
War. But I guess the idea.
That's why we review movies, not history.
what came into popular culture then was the scientific debate, I guess, of nurture versus nature.
But even before that,
are you born bad or do you learn, you know, does your environment shape you?
I mean, this is what's so weird about this movie, right? Because, I mean, this is what Hitler was about, right? This is called eugenics. This is the idea that we could take evolution in our own hands and weed out the bad genes, right? And in there's actually a movie in 1934 that was banned called Tomorrow's Children. I want to say you can watch it on YouTube. And it's about a woman and her family are threatened by the state to be sterilized because they've got alcoholism and criminalization in their family, you know, but everybody obviously saw it for like, what the fuck is it? It's saying that, you know, you're going to like pick and choose. Yeah. And then of course the whole Hitler thing happened. And then somehow it's still like stuck around as a good idea. And I think that's because we took all the scientists from Germany and brought them into America under that project Paperclip. So I think that's where eugenics still stayed like relevant. Or, I mean,
well, it's a legitimate science, I guess, the idea.
It is, but it's a very genetic trait. But it's a very dangerous science because
the application of the data.
Exactly. The application. Exactly. Like, you know, a lot of people like talk about the good Hitler's.
Some very good points.
Exactly. But it's just like how he went about it. Just like the whole. But that's usually what eugenics does end up to me. You are picking, like, who are you to choose what's the good and bad genes of somebody? It is going to be murder to somebody, you know? Because it's like, what? You don't want my gene? You know? Yeah. Oh, no. So this movie explores it. I mean, if you've seen this movie, you might be like, well, what the fuck? This isn't like a crazy, creepy, like horror movie or a cult movie. But I would say, like, out of the horror, like, if you don't look at like the universal horror movies, if you just look at some of the earliest horror movies, I would say this is one of the most, I wouldn't say influential, but I think it's just one of the best.
Well, one of the things that struck me tonight is, you know, we give, or I guess, you know, as in filmdom has given credit to Psycho, right, in 1960 as being like one of the first psychological horror films where you deal with the broken psychology of its character. And then there were, you know, all these copies made. Yeah. You know, subsequently, but like this is 1956, right? So we were already in this one dealing with, you know, someone with that whole thing of Freudian interpretation of the psychology of a serial killer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The monster isn't, you know, the coming from out there. Now it's, you know, in the family and how it affects like everyone who's like related to it or, you know, in the orbit of this character. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen other stuff more recently, like The Good Son.
The Good Son is basically the remake of Bad Seed.
Was there, did anybody see We Need to Talk About Kevin?
No, uh-oh. I was just looking that up the other day. I don't know why. Maybe it was subconsciously influenced by the Bad Seed, but that one is
because it's from the from the parental angle of you know a child who's exhibiting some kind of
psychosis psychopathy of
And I would say the latest one that I would think even comes close to this even though it's not Babadook.
I was thinking about that.
Is about a mother dealing with her fucking like crazy kid, right? Yeah. And then you have to learn the monster story or whatever. But so this movie is about a little girl who you want to talk about horror doesn't have a lot of females in their like roster of like, you know, good villains, right? I say Rhoda Penmark is up there, dude. Rhoda like Penmark. She's a fucking evil little girl, dude. She's so evil.
Well, that's what it's like. I guess that comes down to like the study of psychopathy, we're saying, right?
Psychopathy? I'm not coining that phrase.
I think it's probably psychopathy. But the idea that what makes someone evil to the rest of us humans is
abnormal psychology.
The lack of empathy, right? Mm. Which the psychotic or the psychopath. There we go.
That's a word. Yep, you got it.
Right. Exhibits. It's just hard for, I think, like other, you know, like what we're saying, like rational. No, just normally normal adults to recognize, I think, in a lot of ways, like that, yeah. that certain people among, you know, your group or whatever, you know, of humanity are born without that kind of emotional response and know how to read your face and, you know, understand what you're think you're what you're feeling. They don't know why,
because
you feel
they're
that
sociopath,
way,
right?
But I mean, they can,
yes,
they can learn how to, yeah, they just, they know to hide. They have to, like Dexter's like the, about this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You find out exactly how to like hide amongst society.
Because you can manipulate people. If you don't, like, you have no stakes in the game aside, yeah, from self-preservation and being able to do the things that, you know, that you're compelled to do.
Yeah, and I like how,
beyond
like
that, it's like you can just play a game with people.
Rhoda goes to a kind of a finishing school, or it's more of a country school. It is her school, but it is more of a high class, like, finishing school. Not necessarily
the
for
Fern
girls.
Country Day
the
school,
Fern.
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, that kind of gives you an insight, like, when she, like, first, like, curtsies in front of Mrs. Fern, and, like, you can hear almost her, like, just the tone in her voice is very condescending, you know, like, good evening, Mrs. Fern, you know, like, I mean, she's doing everything like precise, right? Yeah. Perfect curtsy, you know.
This is how you're supposed to do it.
Well, she's very charming, but I think that's also, they say, like a trait of psychopaths.
Oh, yes,
you know?
Definitely.
They're very charming. And
well, that's what I thought was very interesting from, I've seen this movie a lot. Started reading some of the book. I'm like 60 pages in or so. Very boring. But it's a book from the 50s.
How long is the book?
It's like 200 pages. Jesus. It should be
it's not that long.
But it's such a analytical read. Like, there's no character. It's all very much like everybody's like whatever.
I know,
like,
it's not that long, but for this story, it shouldn't be that long.
Well, like, yeah, by this movie, could you tell? Oh, there's an apartment, yes, manager that the Penmarks live with named Mrs. Monica. Breedlove. Monica Breedlove.
Yeah.
And she lives with her brother, Emery. Now, watching this, could you tell Emery is a latent homosexual?
No.
He lives with his sister.
I didn't know they were living together. I didn't.
Yeah, they kind of just talk about. Well,
I figured
she always
he
talks
lived
about
in the building when he,
right,
was there.
Yeah,
but
that's what
I
got.
I didn't know.
You didn't get that they live with each other?
No, that they're brothers.
When there's that little bird, he's like, I mean, they're showing, this is like what, in 1956, how they could show
they
a fruity guy, you know, especially because he talks about being alone. It's like, why would a man in his 50s be alone living with this? You know, this is their way of like
the confirmed bachelor.
I mean, the book, right, the book does tell you straight out, you know, like, hey, yeah, this guy's got latent
Page
homosexual.
Well, Emery, latent homosexual.
In the book, 25. They even talk about how Monica might even have some incestual. I mean, the book is 100% like, psychological examination
of
everybody,
people,
right? Mm. To the point where you can't even read it as a fun book. You're just like, God damn, this is like a fucking textbook.
Well, they bring some of that into the movie because there is, like, Monica has gone and she met Sigmund Freud
yeah,
at some point,
yeah,
and was went to analysis, and so
has become a self described analyzer at this point.
Like, everything's
just like a hobby one, or what, yeah, you know, it's like because she went to a psychiatrist,
right,
now she
well,
thinks that
she
can
just thinks that this is the new world.
Yeah.
The, yes, new world is we analyze every thought about each other and we try to put each other in the boxes that we whatever. So, like, everything she talks about has,
yes,
to deal with analyzing in some weird way, shape,
yeah,
or
well,
form.
Well, it's self help, right? It's like if you analyze, it worked for me. If,
right,
you analyze yourself, you're going to uncover these things and be able to eliminate some of your hangups. That came from the 60s, right? The hangup?
Well, that's another weird thing about this movie. It doesn't focus a lot on it at all. At all. It's just in there. That's weird. Where it's a very positive thing that the psychiatrist convinces her to leave her husband, right? It's
right,
a very,
yeah,
positive, like, woohoo, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's a little weird, you know? It's that whole, like, trying to get women away from men, you know? And
well,
how,
she has,
like,
self-awareness at that point of something that she was unaware of before. And once the door's been open, you can't go back and see it, you know, the same way, mm-hmm, again. It's like, that's the danger. Why, well, the danger?
The danger. That's, it is the
I
danger.
I suppose it's one of the things that you have to be prepared with if you go into some kind of psychoanalysis.
Yeah, because right. I would actually...
Your switch perception. Where you're just, yeah, like, I can't see it the other way now.
Well, because, yeah, I would actually be afraid that it teaches you to go off on a whim, right? Any thought you have on your head, like, oh, I want to leave my husband, you leave your husband. You're not, you know, you don't stick it out because, I mean, and then, I mean, shit, look where we've gone 60 years from there where, I mean, people are married for, you know, barely any time at all before they're like, oh, we got a problem.
Yep.
It's time to fucking...
But with this, I
we
like...
We cannot overcome that.
In this, I like how they played down the whole psychoanalysis, because the people that are really involved with psychoanalysis, they're the ones that see the complete shell of this little girl. The mom who wants nothing to do with psychoanalysis, she's the one that like sees through her. The rest of them who go through and check all these boxes, like, I know, I can figure out who you are. They're the ones that are completely tricked by this little girl.
Right.
Yes.
And that's just because, I mean, she's grown up around her. I like how she does, like, kind of placate her for the first bit, but then later she's like, I know you're, you know, because I love that, like, I have the prettiest mother, the sweetest mother, dude. I love that.
Yeah. Well, there's also that,
something
I mean,
kids do, though, because they know when they want them. They don't want to be in trouble. They're like, and they do. They'll hug you. They're like, I love you. And just like, don't do that.
Well, I love how Rhoda will even, like, if she knows it's getting away from what she wants, she finds a way to bring it back up. You know, like when she's reading the story and then she, like the mother starts kind of like reading off in the distance. I mean, we haven't really talked about the plot, but we'll get into it in a second. But she starts like kind of like dazing off, and Rhoda's kind of like, you know, she starts asking her a bunch of questions, and then she like asks her about something she had just read, and the mom's like, oh, you know, she gets back to it. Then Rhoda kind of like, she's satisfied in the fact that, oh, I was able to loop her back to like what I wanted her to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So now I can like, so, well, the main plot of this movie, just to get it through real quickly, is Rhoda goes to a picnic, and she is very jealous of this boy named Daigle. Anybody remember the first name of the
Claude.
Kid?
Chuck?
Claude Daigle.
Claude Daigle.
And Claude? He won a penmanship medal, and I like how she's like, it's mine. He knew it was mine. Like, that's when like she really shows through, right? Like when she, but once again, it's like, is that just a child? I mean, is that just her acting as if like the way a normal child does,
right?
Like throwing a temper tantrum over a fucking penmanship medal.
Yeah.
But then of course, they get the news that the Daigle boy drowned. That'd be nice if a local news was like that. You know? Yeah.
We
like,
interrupt this program to let you know that there's been a child who has died at a local park.
Just a local
details
picnic.
To come. And then like 30 seconds later, they have the whole story.
Claude Daigle, age 8, was found.
Yeah.
Remarkably
bruises
fast.
On his hands and face. Yes. And, yeah.
But I do like how this movie, I mean, the way I think of this is a horror movie is, I mean, you are seeing a woman slowly realize her daughter.
Yeah, that's the horror of it. Definitely.
You know, that's the...
And considering the crowd it was made for, 1956, like you can... Right, that's the horror.
Because you didn't even need a body in a horror movie back in the day. You just needed intent to murder. And they're like, he means to murder you? And then you know, run away from that for like 88 minutes, and that's a horror movie.
This is like pretty fucking severe, you know, like topic to suggest that this angelic, what is she, 8?
Then,
yes. 8-year-old is a burgeoning serial killer and has already claimed, you know, that we find out one prior victim.
Yes.
And, you know, in the course of the movie, kills at least 2 people and with plans to kill a third.
Yeah.
You know, or I guess her 4th. But, what was I going to say? I like the way that it goes and actually does seem to show you how that, you know, that these people operate, because the environment around them is set up to, like, you just don't believe it. I suppose, you know, like the whole time you're sitting there looking at the mother going like, okay, you have the penmanship award. That's missing from the corpse.
Right.
She has it in her possession. Yeah. You know, it's like all the evidence points to this and she just can't like wrap her head around it. She's like, Rhoda, I want you to tell me what actually happened. Just tell me the truth.
Yeah, she just thinks she stole the medal. Not that she killed the Daigle boy, but like she's like, you lied.
That's what helps enable that, I guess, because you just don't believe that a psychopath, you know, is a psycho.
Right.
Like potential murderer.
And it's almost believable the way she explains it. How she had chased the boy, promised she could wear it for an hour. He lied. She got it from him, like, before he died, and she happened to have it while he died, and then she just ended up keeping it at the house and everything. Like, her explanation for it is almost passable.
Yeah.
Did the movie at any point, like, give you that kind of, you know, I mean, what films of this type generally do, where you have the, well, you know, is the kid a killer, or is it just, you know, the kid just a victim of this type of circumstance? Was there ever any suspense? Or were you like, you know, well, we're watching a movie called The Bad Seed.
It's just her acting. So we know. I mean, if you're knowledgeable, I mean, just Patty McCormick, that is the actress that played Little Rhoda.
I'm trying to think of what audiences would think back in the day. Because you can almost, like, when you first hear that she wanted the medal and you see how upset she is about it, and then you hear on the radio that the boy who had the medal is dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At that point, you're just like, because I think at that point, they're directly pointing at the girl.
Especially when the teacher shows up and begins to explain, mm-hmm. like, you know, here's where, you know, I mean, because the teacher.
But I like that scene a lot, though, because you think the teacher is accused. But I like that when the mother, Christine Penmark, when she's like, you think Rhoda, and as soon as her face drops, she's like, I never thought, like, that's why I was like, she doesn't think Rhoda. She is expelling Rhoda just for her sore loser attitude about the penmanship medal.
It's got to be because she's creepy. But she somehow is reading wrong to this teacher.
But the conversation before at the picnic, the teacher's hesitant to give her. Is she popular?
Because she's not doing anything wrong, but she can tell there's something off.
We don't know that we learn in the book. If you read the book, what we don't know is Rhoda was kicked out of her previous school for being cold hearted. And that's why they think, oh, if we put her in this higher end school, she'll excel more because she's just needs to be that. But yeah, I like that point you're talking about. How they're like, is she popular? I'm like, we'll get back to that. Oh my, what's that?
Look at the time.
I really have an appointment over here that I have to deal with.
Yeah, I have to stop putting this hay on the table and go over here. Excelsior.
Sorry. Excelsior. Yeah, I guess it had to be. And I like how Monica Breedlove is the character that supplies the nurture over nature. Monica Breedlove is the everything is perfect. Rhoda is so perfect, and here's glasses for you, and here's this is like people being overly accepting of Rhoda. No matter, even if she's rude,
Very overly.
She'll just be like, I appreciate a child that's forthcoming, So that's where I'm like, what are they? I think it's there to give you kind of a balance of like, is this nature versus nurture? Because you could see how everybody's just like, what a beautiful little girl.
And but the film brings in this subplot, which becomes like, a major component of it, where the Rhoda's mother has always had what we come to learn as the changeling fantasy, which is, my parents aren't really my parents. I'm actually adopted. I'm from a, royal birth or whatever. I mean, it's a fairly common childhood fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so she just kind of, it turns out that, she has these memories and these dreams that she's had. And this ties into this like true crime investigative story.
Her father was a criminal investigator.
But
after
specifically,
the law
he investigated one serial killer,
Bessie Dankert. I don't know.
I think that it's sounds Bessie right. Dankert. Yeah.
Who poisoned nine people or something?
Yeah,
in
the book, she kills like her two nieces that are like 2 years old. That's how fucking that book is pretty holy fuck, dude. This is pretty nuts. Well, this movie's like old people.
Well,
old
going
people,
back to that
they're
point,
useless.
Really quickly, because this has such a heavy, theme, I guess, for 1956. The studio makes all of these concessions to kind of take the edge off of it. At the very end of the movie, they trot out the entire cast, kind of like you would at a play.
Mm. Yeah.
And you get to see the lead actress fake spanking the little girl actress.
Right.
Because
laughing.
I think that's you're trying to say look, she's being punished for
because in 1950, how many little children did they kill in movie? We'll get to that in the end, but still everything at the end is to make up for everything else you saw. They're like, don't.
Yeah, it's pretty
keep
heavy,
going to Warner Brothers Pictures.
Right, yeah.
Her father, Richard Bravo.
Bravo.
Which is, he's dead in the book.
Dick Bravo.
That's why I'm really interested in, that's the almost, one of the only reasons, I gotta finish this book, because it's what is the role? How does she find out?
That's what I was going to ask you, but then you didn't finish the book. How does she find out?
Because
not Rhoda's father. You're saying
Christine's
father.
Penmark, Richard Bravo, the crime writer. Yeah, So, because we find out that...
She was a changeling.
She was a changeling. Yes. He was investigating this, like, ruthless murderer, and somehow Christine was left behind, or somehow she got away, or...
As an infant.
Yeah.
And he found her, and... That's a really sweet scene. I love that scene.
So the idea
I don't
being,
remember much, and then she begins to describe in detail a very specific scene.
For a two-year-old, that's impressive, too. She climbed out the window and hid in the, you know,
I
whatever.
Climbed through the reeds, and then I looked out through the bush, and there was my mother, and she was calling my name.
There was moonlight out. And, like, give me little pauses to,
and
like...
And the name she claimed was...
Denker.
It was like Ingo.
Ingo Denker.
Ingo, yeah, Ingo. Ingo. I was like, what? Is that, was that a popular name back in the day? Like, Ingo? Maybe it's like Ingo? Polish or something.
What was
we just don't know.
The dead boy's mother's
Patty?
Name?
Patty?
Oh, no. God damn it. Eustace? Was it Eustace? No.
Hortense. Hortense.
Hortense.
Hortense.
Yeah.
Hortense.
Was that a popular Hortense. Name back then?
I fucking love. Oh, like, I gotta tell you, dude, that is like really when I first saw this movie. I mean, that's what stands out is that actress playing Hortense. Hortense Dangle.
I got drunk and came over.
I'm sorry. I got
that's
drunk.
Okay. I'm okay. But oh my God, dude. Like, I've never been. That is one of those you can laugh and completely cry at that scene. Yeah. Like, it is. Like, the more you watch this movie, you'll see the humor and then you'll see the sadness. Like, I used to only laugh at it until I've and now I only cry at that scene because it's so fucking sad. Even though it's comedy, she's fucking drunk off her ass. Right. But, you know, she's still like, where's your little girl? You know, I just want to ask her, well, anything. You know?
Yeah.
It's she's funny, but it's, side. It's so tense. For, like, the 50s, I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, this is so stressful. Like, I was really, like,
they
feeling
have
the,
to deal
the
with it.
Yeah.
Like, today's movie, TV universe, all dramas over secrets. Where this is like, no, it's about, the drama is about people just like knocking on the fucking door,
an overt
being
problem
like,
that is just presenting itself.
Yeah, they're not straight out saying, I think Rhoda killed my boy, but they're just like, they say he's the last one, you know?
Right.
Last one I saw. Any little Bill thing.
I'm not saying anything, but I just.
I love the Holzman. Hortense. Please.
It's time to go. He's from shit.
Oh, I know a lot of.
I know, yeah.
So my glasses walk around talking a lot quicker.
Oh,
yeah,
so is
the I was looking at
the
I'm like,
father, the
yeah,
colonel.
Yeah, all the guys are familiar. Yeah. Like the doctor,
but I'm
the
like,
brother.
Is it because I've seen this movie before?
I know Patty McCormick, Rhoda herself. She was in a episode of. Damn it, I'm gonna lose it. It's either Outer Limits or like Chiller Theater.
Diagnosis
or like
Murder.
Yeah, she went on to have like a series on something.
Oh yeah,
but I'm not sure if it was like How Big Was My Valley or you know. Something she was on subsequently that you know
how big was the valley
you know?
It was huge,
but I guess the movie is with this the introduction of the confirmation I guess that Christine was adopted and so therefore Rhoda has inherited this
the serial killer
the serial killer
mother. Yeah. This is how dangerous this movie is in a weird way, right?
Like, but that's what it's advocating.
It
right?
Is it
all the characters,
but
in
it
the
fixes
movie...
it at the end. But I don't know if that's the, once again, once I get done reading the book, I'll know whether is this the author's like conclusion or is this the film industry that's like we don't want people thinking that like bad people like have bad offspring, even though I think they're actually
well. Pleasant. You have two. I think that they're supposed to be like the. The they're not like the representatives of clinical psychology. I guess they are, right?
There's
That's what the guy does.
Reginald Tasker, who's a friend of like Monica Breedlove's.
Yeah, but he's a writer.
Like
he's
kind of a crime writer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or investigator or some type
something
of
like that.
Because
she's always talking
something.
Like the blood and go like oh his buckets of blood and and whatever.
But he proposes the idea that possibly like these type of traits can be passed on genetically, but. I believe her father, who was a true crime writer, and the doctor in at the end.
Yeah,
right.
They basically said, "Oh, that's all."
Yeah, they're the opposing.
Hogwash. They're like, oh, they call it.
I can't
something
say
else.
He calls it
trawl whip. All right, well, with that, that's a bunch of
hog
box
trollops.
Trolls. No, I don't know what,
bunch
it, was.
Of,
what was
malarkey
it?
Hog trollops.
Hog troll. It's something like that. There was another great phrase. I'd be a Milwaukee mongoloid and.
Oh, yeah, like a model, like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I like
that one down. That's a great
I like
insult.
It. She thinks she can't melt butter. She's so cool. Yeah, Leroy. We're going to talk about Leroy.
Well, we will.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what, you know, the idea that then the movie is presenting is that this is clearly, even though, like, the guys who are advocating, like, you know, no, this is hogwash. Yeah. That, you know,
they're the ignorant society, right? They're like, we're not ready to believe that sciencey stuff. You know, that's what they are.
Advancement of some sort.
But I love the, like, I mean, it even still breaks my heart when the grandfather, Christine's father, the crime writer, when he looks at Rhoda, because she's talking about how, like, could it have passed? Could it, you know, because, you know, it actually comes out. She brings her past memories up to her father, and he kind of reveals it all, which I love that fucking scene where he's like, you were the best thing. I just love that. He's like, first this, like, really, like, proud father. Then he's almost this desperate guy, like, don't fucking hate me because I lied to you and you're really not blood related to me. Like, this is probably one of the only times in a movie where, like, just by the actor walking in, oh, I feel the blood relation. And then by the end of that scene, I was like, holy fuck, you know, this person is not related to this person at all. He's still like, don't, like, not love me as a father. You know, I love you as a daughter. Don't. And I love when he looks at Rhoda in the face, then he turns to Christine, he does that little shake, like,
no.
That's a good moment.
It's a fucking
good moment, dude. Yeah.
Ah, so sweet, this movie.
Yeah.
I don't think any other horror movie makes me fucking, like, tear up as much as this movie. It's too great.
Well, since you brought him up, Leroy.
I saw you follow that little boy to
So he's identified. He's the building janitor, for lack of a better word. And he's Martha, Mary, Aunt Marlene.
Breedlove. Monica Breedlove.
Says that basically he has the intelligence of an 8-year-old himself. And so he's supposed to be, like, you know, kind of a dim-witted guy, but at no point in the movie by the performance did I buy that he was dim-witted. He was just as kind of a, you know, lower class.
Childish in a way. Like, he gets into arguments, teases.
He's
petty about the things when he washes her shoes as she's walking out. Like, he's childlike, but not, like, intelligent level down to an 8-year-old, but he has childlike qualities.
He is the psyche that is supposed to best relate to Rhoda's.
Yeah.
He is like, you know, I like that. He's like, that little Rhoda, she's smart, almost as smart as me.
But he sees her, like, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Well, see, okay, so maybe this is one.
But she talks to him, like, fluently. Like, she doesn't care. Like, if she's not around her mother or, like, Monica or something, like, she doesn't care about being. I love that, like, what do I care? It was Claude Dougal that drowned, not me, or whatever the fuck. It's so, like, skates away. God, dude.
Like, damn.
Yeah, she talks to him like, not like an equal, but she covers for their conversation at one point where it was like, she could manipulate this situation because mom comes in and sees the older, you know, gardener or whatever talking to the little 8-year-old girl, like, why are you talking to her? Don't be talking to her. And she comes out and says, like, I started it, mother, you know, but they had just had a conversation where basically he's accusing her almost of murder. You know, it's like, I see you. It's like, because I'm like you. I understand you. Like, he sees through her.
They got that bloodhound. And when they put that stick's going to turn blue like a little Robin's there. That fucking
fire. I think she likes having the confidant.
You think?
I think so.
Because this is where I was like, the movie had an opportunity there.
Really?
Where I guess one of the issues that I had with the movie, the first one, was where it felt disingenuous was that Leroy's character this whole time has been, like, basically on the ball. You know, he's got her dead to rights.
Yeah.
He sees what she's doing and is just kind of like, you know, because he's over explaining how he knows it, right? It's like, I know you did this. I know you killed that little boy, and I know you did it with this and this and this. Where it's like, okay, so either he is trying to gain favor with her where he can say, you know, we're going to have this kind of confidential relationship. It's like, what does he get out of it?
He's just teasing her. He doesn't know any of that.
Well, I know that's where it goes, but it feels the whole time because he's so on the ball and so persistent about it. When it turns out that, like, oh my God, I was just teasing you and I didn't actually think that you killed that boy, but now by your answer, I believe that you killed that boy. And then he's freaked out.
I told you I got anybody shoes.
That didn't ring as, like, genuine. It seemed like he stuck
with the he's got it and actually thinks she did it.
Because this is the moment, it seemed like that was the moment in the story where basically, because he has her over a barrel.
Yeah.
Only in that, like, he can't go to the mom, because who would believe him? He can't really go to the cops until he has, like, some evidence. So it's like, I know this about you, which you have to, you know, assume. Like, the viewer sits there assuming that, like, well, she's going to fucking kill him.
Yes.
So this is the point where he should be making demands. This is what I want out off of you, and I will keep the...
But he doesn't know anything. Until she freaks out about the shoes...
But this is the way... That's the I guess, only I'm saying that's the way it plays.
Because he... All he knew it. But all he does is say what the radio says. The boy was found on the war, right?
But even he comes up with the shoe thing.
No, he says stick. He's pretty,
no,
he
but says, he changes... The last
because she says something
shoes.
About the shoes.
Right, but he changes to it, even though he's... Right after that, he says he was just joking. Like, he's still joking when he brings up the shoes. He just happens to be right on the money.
Yeah.
Because right after that, he's just like, I was just joking. I didn't think you did it. But he had it right there.
I guess well, I just had a problem
she, like, asked
that
him
that
about...
He was that close on the mark where he didn't actually mean. Because
he's like, maybe it wasn't a stick, but maybe it was, like, whatever. And he basically gets to the point where, you know, he gets her to admit that she tried to burn some shoes. Give them back. Give them back. I love her. God, yeah, she's so evil, dude.
Yeah.
But you're right.
It's like, hey, we can. You can tell me. And, you know, kind of like a Dexter
he doesn't
situation
ever back
can
down.
Happen there. It's like, because he says, like, you know. Because
he's a mean dude, right? That,
you know, he knows I know she's you're mean because yeah. I'm mean. And I'm I've mean done too. Stuff, too. You know, yeah. But you don't know that he's killed people or what he's really talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's just probably, I mean, he might be a pervert. He might be something. Who knows, right? Yeah. Or it just could be. I mean, I think the whole idea behind his character is the fact that he's hiding in society to Monica Breedlove the same way Rhoda's hiding in society, right? He's able to keep up his, like, just lawn duty work or whatever, his managerial, but he's like, they don't know how smart I am, you know, that sort of fucking thing, right?
So it brings up
I
a
sleep
point.
In the
like,
basement.
Is, in the book, is he a pervert?
No, but now that
like
you said
that,
Reginald Tasker, the crime writer, how he's like, he mentions that weird little thing about the girl. I was like, that was very pervy.
That was
so
creepy.
I wonder, like, I haven't. Reginald Tasker, when we first introduced the crime writer and he introduces Rhoda, and he's like, oh, those pretty, like, you know.
He's like, you're going to make a man very happy. Someday.
Yeah,
like,
he's
it's
just
really
like, that beautiful. Blah, blah. Yeah. Even though I love that scene where he, like, pulls her her pigtail out in the front, and then she, like, walks past the front door, and then she, back. Like, corrects it. That's fucking genius, dude, because it just shows how she'll let people, like, do whatever, but then she's like, fuck you, you know, I still got my own thing.
There are
but
some creepy moments in that regard, because like, everybody's a little too close to each other.
But I
this.
Think that's the point of this movie. The point is everybody has a psychological evil in them. Yeah. Everybody, whether it be pedophilia, whether it be incest, whether it be homosexuality, whether it be murder, whether, you know, everybody has something in them. More so in the book, of course, than in this. But you do see it.
Yeah, you see it.
It's not, like, not there, you know?
Yeah. I think with Leroy and
Bruce Leroy.
I think
he say that? Like, I saw you follow that little boy on the wall. Oh, God, yeah.
I think he's like the mirror of her.
Yeah.
Because she's this 8-year-old who's committing these very adult crimes, and he's an adult who's actually got this 8-year-old mindset. So I think his evil, his crimes, I think are probably just the little petty things like spraying her shoes.
Well, he probably
he's not like the secret. I don't think he has
any,
like,
secret
sense.
Well, he probably thinks hers are just as bad as his.
Exactly.
He thinks they're little bullshit things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, he, once again, he probably just thinks maybe she stole the pendant and not even,
yeah,
you know.
I don't think he's done anything beyond, like, secret little piddly shit that a maintenance man can do.
Right.
You know, but like, maybe thinks
like,
they're a big deal.
Like, creep through someone's stuff or something. I don't think he's done
it's
anything
worse
than
that.
It's just
nice because he's the only character that can just come out and talk to her about what's going on.
Because
the mother doesn't want to realize it. You know, she keeps making excuses even in her own mind for, like, why her daughter would do this or how it would seem. But he's at least a character that can be like, I believe you did it.
Yeah. But the mother actually does come around, which, you know, or becomes aware of this. And then the movie takes on, like, a new
dynamic.
Because
Leroy dies. Like, that's the first time she saw... I mean, she gets him to, like, admit it, when she's going to throw the shoes away.
The dynamic shifts before that, though.
Yeah. Well, it's because when she's going to go... When she's going to incinerate the shoes, that's when she knows, like, you're getting rid of fucking Evan. Oh, right, like, yeah. You tell me what happened, but she still tries to make it seem like, I can't help who I am, right? Like, I told him it was mine. I told him, like, what would happen, it's like, you know?
It wasn't my fault. I warned him.
It wasn't my fault. I told him, you know? And she's only crying because she wants her mom to see, like, some sympathy, right? It's not even, like, a real...
Can't you see? I had no choice.
But I love that, the struggle between the mother, like... I mean, in a weird way, it's like, oh my God, is this like a pro-abortion movie, too? Because, I mean, this mother just said, be like, do I take care of this before anybody else does, you know?
Euthanasia or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's, are you, if the kid is yours, are you responsible? Well, I mean, it puts that moral dilemma up, right? I mean, I guess that's what becomes interesting. That's why I said the dynamic shifts, because the mother, like the kid, she's got the kid dead to rights, right? As far as I have evidence and I can see through you. I know you. I know you're acting. I can see the mask that you're putting on to make you, you know, so don't bullshit me. Tell me what happened. And, you know, the psycho is sitting there going like, well, I can tell her. And then like, I don't know what would happen because mom does actually. The first thing is like, I've got to call the teacher. If that call would have went through, it turns out the teacher wasn't there. And that saves that whole story from happening. So then mom is like, okay, I can't get hold of the teacher, so I just need to sit and think about it. And the thing that she comes up with is like, we need to burn these shoes. It's like, so she does go out and dump the pendant, and so she is covering for and becoming an accomplice to an accessory
and to murder insane.
To, well, because she has she's a moral character, right? Mm. She's having the problem that the psychopath doesn't have.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Almost violently at certain points. Just slamming her fists on the table.
Yeah, that's just how to show a 1950s, like, mom fucking freaking out, right?
She loves her daughter. She gave birth to the daughter, raised the daughter. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to, I mean, I guess part of it, she believes it, but she's, like, resigned to it. And I suppose, naively, she just believes that if we can take care of this particular thing, it'll go away.
Yeah, because she's hoping, like, maybe this is one time.
Or, right.
You know, because she even asks her crime writer guy, like, is there any hope? Like, oh, no. Once they murder, you know.
It's all over.
The reason that I guess this kind of stuff, like, interests me, I saw an article not too long, a couple of years ago. There was a neuroscientist named James Fallon. And he was doing a study on psychopathic, he had like a bunch of brain scans of psychopaths and was trying to do like a study on it. But he was also doing a study on Alzheimer's patients at the same time and had gotten brain scans of everyone in his family. And so once he identified the portion of the brain in the scan that wasn't lighting up to, you know, show the empathy center, basically like this is a clearly psychopathic brain. He found one in the stack of his own family.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it turns out it was his.
Yeah.
So instead of actually like retreating into, obscurity, he actually went public kind of with this discovery. It's like, so I am a psychopath. And then it like starts to explain like a lot of his behavior. So now he's like, you know, so he's like a nonviolent psychopath. He's got things that he does and, you know, to walk a certain...
Masturbate constantly.
I know. Well, there's got to be another element that is not present in which he would, like, you know, kill people or try to satisfy whatever need that is. Right.
He doesn't have the need to kill people, but he still sees people as playthings, I guess, in a way that he wasn't aware of before, to the point where he was saying, like, you know, I read, like, these interviews with him where he would say... You know, like in talking to his wife, there's things that he can say to her to make her feel better. You know, it's like, well, do you care that she feels better about something? He's like, no, not really. But I mean, it makes my life easier. And she likes hearing it. And it was just like really cold.
Yeah.
That's a sociopath, sure. Right? That's just
right. And if you look at like high operating business CEOs and stuff like that, like the people who get to high levels of that achievement, and if you look at them, I'm sure they've done tests and everything that like they're having those same things in their brain.
Yeah.
Like there's pieces that are not there that allow them to be able to do that to people and just not give a shit.
People are playthings. Somehow subhuman because people are basically there for your own satisfaction or, you know.
Well, because if they didn't get to where you are, they're not as good as you. That's right. That's the thinking. If they didn't succeed to the point you have, you're obviously better than that.
And you can play this and they buy it.
This is why eugenics, I fear eugenics. I mean, this is the worst thing humanity ever came up with. If evolution is supposed to be a natural process, human fallibility mixing in with fucking evolution is horrible, right? Because we're just going to pick what we think, what we consider to be either beautiful or intelligent or, you know, blah, 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 blah,
blah.
There's
this movie called Gattaca.
Yeah.
Gattaca.
But in this movie, and again, I don't know if I'd ever heard this before, but maybe it's a scientific theory that, the psychopathic brain is perhaps a, you know, predecessor to the modern evolved human brain. Like, you know, when we were, you know, apes running around, like, you know, you may have actually had to use this type of lack of empathy response in order to, you know, succeed to, you know, that would be the survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
But well, it's been evolved out because as society grows and things become more complicated.
It makes you wonder if it's made him a better scientist. Because he sees people as research projects, basically. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's helped him become a better scientist.
I think he's written books and stuff. I mean, it's the psychology of the psychopath is kind of interesting. And because of that, it's like giving me insight into, you know, watching The Bad Seed, where it's like, holy crap, they're pretty much using this exact. I mean, this is like a pretty good, you know.
Well, look at The Nutty Professor. Dude, all movies were about eugenics back in the 50s. It's like really creepy to think, actually, how everybody wanted to, like, just take humanity and, you know, just basically try to make fucking spreadsheets and goddamn statistics out of being a human and, like, picking what's the best. I mean, that's scary shit, dude. And we'll keep going back to it. We're still doing it. We, you know, always. It's scary.
I kind of imagine it makes them better workers because they don't have to worry about
that
whole part of like how people feel about them or how they make people feel or what they do to them. They can just forget all that and do work. Mm-hmm. So that's like a whole part of most people's everyday lives where they can just ignore it and focus on other things.
Yeah.
It's got to.
It makes sense.
So...
Yeah, no. So,
so we're all not psychopaths because we're sitting in a basement doing a podcast.
Job, guys.
So it resolves itself. The resolution of the film, because we have to talk about the ending, the way that it was apparently originally in the novel and in the.
Yeah, I don't know how it ends in the novel. I haven't finished the novel. You guys are going to ruin it.
I'm going to ruin it. Well, I mean,
motherfucker.
It's basically.
I just read 60 pages of that shit.
Well, in the end, care. The so she
the does, journey, not the destination.
Travis. Bullshit.
The girl actually does target Leroy and kills him, right? Mm-hmm. Which is drives the mom kind of to have a nervous breakdown because she saw it coming.
And did nothing.
And this is the movie we're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so because of this, she takes it, you know, it's like, this is my responsibility. I gave birth to the girl, so I'm going to feed her an overdose of sleeping pills.
Which is so sad, right? Because it's like foreshadowed by Monica being like, I've got these vitamins, or these like sleeping pills.
Vitamins. Yeah. Clearly
it is
labeled.
Fucking,
you'll never confuse the two.
And then as soon as you see like Rhoda laying down on the couch, you're like, oh, fuck, dude. You're like, you know what she's going to do.
I thought the mom was going to do it and just leave everything behind. Like, I didn't know she was going to do it to the kid.
Oh, yeah?
I thought she was going to take it.
Oh, no shit, like, dude. Well, now she's killing her kid.
When Monica first brought her the pills, I thought she was going to do it. And then when she was reading to her, I'm like, no, she's going to give them to the kid.
I like the idea that if you introduce a gun in the first act, it has to be used in the third. And all they do is talk about it. Like, oh, Ken, you know, Ken.
I don't even like the revolver he keeps in the bedroom.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it.
That's what's most frightening about it. It's scary enough when she feeds her daughters the sleeping pill. And I love how, like, she looks away as she's taking it. It's so sad. Yeah.
Well, she has a moral responsibility to deal with it.
She has to do it, or this girl's gonna kill more people, or whatever. And then I love like her fucking little like monologue about how like you came from me and I'll always love you. Oh, it's
like, I won't let them hurt you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can just imagine
really
the stories about the mothers who kill their children today looking down at their kids and saying the same things to them.
before they, you know, drive the car into the
lake. But usually the mothers are crazy, not the kids.
Right, but like the same argument can almost be go but either way.
That would be creepy, actually. I'm going to make that movie, the bad scene, but it's the opposite, where she's like, she's evil. And it's just like the crazy mom that I have to put her in my trunk and drown her.
Yeah. Well, but in this case, as the movie went on, she did start to lose her shit. Like, she started to go crazy.
Well, that's so eventually when, you know, the aftermath, you can look at her and say, like, was she... you know, did this, she poisoned her daughter because she went crazy. You know what I mean? So it takes blame off of the kid, I guess, for a narrative perspective.
Yeah.
But she poisons, she gives the kid an overdose and then shoots herself.
Yeah. And it surprised me.
That's fucking,
I didn't see coming.
That's a shocking ending, dude. Like, she puts her daughter in one room, then goes to her room, and you just hear like her open the drawer, then the bang. It's like, that's fucking filmmaking.
Because I thought she was going to take the pills, because she said she was going to take them as well.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to take them also. And I thought she was going to go into the room, take them, and that'd be it. I wasn't expecting the gunshot.
She said, I'm going to sleep also.
Yeah, she just says sleep. Yeah, she like alludes to it.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's frightening. Like, that startles you when you hear the...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Which the movie could end there, really.
I think it has... Okay, so the...
No, it ends with her skipping into frame and then freeze frame and slow push in on the creepy-looking child.
Well, this is how it should have ended and how the book ends with the subsequent scene in the doctor's office, I believe.
Which every movie in the 50s ended was in doctor's offices. Yeah. Isn't it weird? Psycho, everybody like, well, you see, this thing was going on where...
This is the explanation for the aberrant behavior. So the mother, in the book, the mother has died. And we find out, you know, through clever screenwriting, they're referring to her. Is she going to be okay or whatever?
Yeah.
I think it turns out that the neighbors heard the gunshot, came over, found Rhoda, had her stomach pumped, and she survived. Now no one knows that she was a serial killer, so she's free now to do this again.
Yeah.
The movie changes that ending, and... this is, I think, was the second real problem that I had with the movie, because it feels like the ending just kind of goes on and on and on and past its logical ending point, where it's like, if you would end it right there with her skipping into frame, like, but at least we have Rhoda.
And
what a setup.
And you could see it, and it's almost set up so that you're giving the audience time, to the 1956 audience time to gasp. Like, you still have Rhoda.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's set up that way.
Which you did get the first time I ever saw it. Got me, dude. Yeah. I was
like, what the fuck?
Cut to black, but no.
They had morality laws back in the day. Like, if you committed murder, you have to die.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot survive, so they
crime
had to, like...
cannot pay in a movie by the production code.
You can't
1956.
Get away with crime, right. So they had to fucking have lightning hit Rhoda. It was an act of God.
God kills the bad seed.
She checks to see if her dad is sleeping, gets her slicker stuff on. I'm like, oh, she's going to the hospital to finish the job and just killed her mother. But no, she goes to look for the medal on the dock.
Oh, she's happy her mom's dead. She's the one person that can link her. That's what's so evil about this movie, dude. Yeah. Like, I know it. Like, she don't give a fuck her mom's dying,
and then just a random lightning strike blows up the dock and kills her.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that ending?
It was the end.
I was like, what? Why? It's so random.
It's a little random. But you still have your, you know, all you need is the Rhoda survived. You're good to go. That's your ending.
Well, and mom also survives in this one. She makes a phone call to
her. Don't you wish she was married to you? Like, she's just like, I love you. I love you. It's like, I want to marry a woman like this that just loves you. That just fucking like, oh, Kenneth.
I almost feel like Kenneth. Kenneth is just like, don't talk now. We'll talk about it later. And he's just like, we're getting divorced. Just don't talk about it.
He tried to kill our daughter.
Where Kenneth comes home to find out his fucking wife tried to kill his daughter through suicide. That's another horror story. Almost, you're like, what the fuck is? Almost, who is this person?
You can almost make that movie today, The Bad Seed, but start it out in the aftermath of this movie. The dad and his daughter, and he thinks everything's fine.
Yeah, and she kills more.
And she does it, and she does more, and then he's got to look back into what happened to his wife and people before, and then he learns what actually happened. God. That's the movie you make today. Start out with the dad and the daughter. I'm writing this tomorrow.
Would you be surprised to know that they did remake The Bad Seed for television in the 80s?
Really?
There's an 80s
remake. Wasn't looked at too well, from what I hear.
Yeah, I can't remember who was in it. I just saw a listing that there was another bad
scene. Interesting. TV. I mean, yeah, the other bad scene is called The Good Son, but...
No. Yeah.
So in that one, though, I mean, it's basically Macaulay Culkin is a... He's a psychopath.
And well, you have a good kid to replace the bad kid. I mean, yeah. That's basically The Good Son. It's like, oh, well, we killed my psycho Macaulay Culkin, but Elijah Wood will now be our new son. That's what they should call it, the new son.
So, I don't remember much about that. Like, what the
I love that movie, too.
It just seems like, well, I mean, that's a wrap-up thing.
My parents made me close my eyes at the end when they're hanging off the cliff.
Really?
I can't look. I was very young. When did it come out?
93, early I don't know.
90s, yeah.
It was early, yeah. No, so like, don't look at this
part.
We got
a Captain Google on that? Good son? It doesn't matter, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But, yeah, so, I don't know. Is that... Are we ready for mailbags?
I mean, the lightning struck. I think that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Which cheapens another way. Okay.
Well, but, they had to... They had to do it.
93 was The Good Son.
Yeah. You know where the real ending of it is.
Yeah. Well, in hindsight, Little I think Rhoda. But I think that always did kind of leave me, rub me the wrong way. But when it got to there, it was like, the movie's doing pretty well. And then, I don't know. Yeah. So we're going to summon our male demon right now. And his name is Igor. Igor, where are you, sir?
Igor. Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right, so Igor has brought us the mail. The way that you can contact us, if you want to, dear listeners, you can get a hold of us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show or on Twitter, where
@SatFreakShow.
Or the old-fashioned way.
Call us.
Horse and Buggy. 1-800-965. Freak.
Yeah. Saturday Night Freak Show @yahoo.com is the email.
Oh.
And so this week, Pamela Johnson writes in and says, this movie was disturbing. It took me a while to get over it. She says about the bad seed. Well, I mean, I can definitely.
Oh, yeah. It's still to this day, like, oh, God, I can't put myself in Christine Penmark's shoes, man. It kills me.
It's creepy.
You want to kill her? Kill the kid.
Perfect. Well, children that kill people.
All right, so next up, we're going to do our wrap-ups or go around the table, and everybody will tell you what we thought of the movie, our final review. And after that, stay tuned, listeners, because we're going to find out what Travis's favorite 10 horror movies of all time are after we hear from Lurk, our butler.
Lurk.
The hour has come, sirs.
Thank you, Lurk.
Thanks, Lurk.
Thank you.
I think Lurk might be a bad seed.
All right. Oh, shit. Shh. Quiet.
There you go. All right, so I'm in the hot spot tonight, so I'm up first with my wrap-up.
Colin.
And this is Colin. Thank you very much.
What did you think of this movie?
Colleen.
I'm glad that you've asked me that, Sean. Really liked this movie. It seems like, I don't know, it seems in some way that, like, movies were more intelligent back in the days when you couldn't rely. I know I sound like a completely like an old guy now, right? Like when you couldn't rely on special effects, you know, when you actually had to have plot and character, you know, I mean, it clips
back
along.
When
there's
they did
a lot
it right.
of, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, now it's like it also kind of, the downside to it, you know, trying to, I guess, do something like this for a modern audience is like, now it is covering a certain psychological ground that has been covered, you know, in, because now you've got daytime talk shows and like all these other, you know, air avenues and 60 Minutes profiles and, you know, where they have actually gone further in depth now with, you know, whatever the 40 years of advancement that we've had on, or it's more than 40 years. Yeah. Sorry, it's like
it's forever.
Yeah,
it's just forever.
Advancement on, you know, the science of psychology. Decades. So, you know, some of it, I guess, now would play maybe to a modern viewer as like, you know, like you'd be ahead of the movie.
Is there such thing as psychology anymore? They just give you a pill. I don't think there is anything in psychology.
There's enough
psychopharmacology now.
Yeah, there you go. Right. But the I think it's a really, probably, you know, this is indicative of the fact that the novel was such a hit, the play was such a hit. It's like, it's a really sharply written, well characterized. I mean, like, each of the characters in this story are very well defined and I think psychologically grounded, you know, in one way or another. It's tense. It's awkward in ways that, you know, it's supposed to make you feel tense and awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, I think just because of the subject matter, you know, the cherubic eight-year-old girl being a serial killer, just an evil, heartless, cold, stone cold, you know, murderer. Well acted. I think it's well directed. I mean, it, to me, it holds up. I think, yeah, you have to see this movie if you're a self-avowed horror film aficionado. And you probably haven't seen it because it's, you know, a classic from yesteryear.
Is it Lost to Time?
I don't know. Just because of the title, Bad Seed. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I think, you know, when you hear that title, I think you think Killer Kid.
Sure.
Right? That's the
that's what made me pick it up. Like, yeah. I would have never, like, I mean...
So this that at least the horror section. Seeped into, you know, like, the, yeah, mm-hmm. into the collective consciousness. So I would say, yeah, check out definitely The Bad Seed. It's a legit good movie on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Not an ironic good movie, a legit
good movie. A legit good movie. Yeah. some audiences today may look at this movie, see that it is, I mean, it's from 1956. It is in black and white. They may see something like that and think, eh, maybe I shouldn't, or maybe, you know, they might find think it may end up being boring. I say that you definitely also should pick this up. It is a, it's a good movie. It's well written. I try to look through it through the eyes of a 1956 audience. If I didn't, it would be a little maybe a little talky. They do. There's a lot of exposition over the psychology of the child, but it had to be fascinating for an audience back then, especially when, a taboo subject as a child serial killer. And back in the day, the psychology of it all had to be something that nobody knew about except for, like, whatchamacallit?
Psychoanalysts, students of Freud and whatnot.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's a word I'm going to say.
Therapists.
Yeah, sure. Academics is what I'm trying to say, okay. Yes. who knew about it? So, I mean, it had to be fascinating, and it is a good movie. Acting is very well, it's very good all around. It's very well written. I can see how this was staged as a play. Like, this would have been fascinating as a play as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, I don't know if we said it, a lot of the people who were on the Broadway play reprised their roles in the film version. A majority of them did. And,
it's like a drawing room play, right?
Where basically,
it basically takes place in the living room of a house.
Yes, most of it does. Yeah. I think what's her name? Nancy Stevens? Nancy Kelly, sorry. Won the Tony Award for this this role. Yeah. Mm. But it's very good. I liked it. It's it feels a little long sometimes, but other than that, it's actually very good. I would definitely recommend picking it up. I give it 3.5 random lightning strikes to kill an 8-year-old out of 5 random lightning strikes to kill
an 8-year-old. It wasn't random, it was God.
God's lightning strikes to kill an 8-year-old.
She committed a sin.
Yep.
And she went back for that damn medal again. So
likes that medal.
Had to get it.
It was hers.
But, well, speaking of God, I kind of... nice
segue,
right?
Speaking of God.
Yeah.
Speaking of God.
Preach.
Speaking of God.
Sorry. I was going to say, I liked how religion...
Where was that going?
Sorry.
I liked how religion wasn't the center of this movie, because everything that they talked about, it very well easily could have gone that route. Like, I don't know where the phrase... the bad seed originated, but I know most of the time people associate it with the seed of Abraham, and which referring to his descendants.
Canaanites.
Exactly, yeah. Like, that's a lot of people refer make that reference to Abraham.
There's people that think that shit.
No, I know.
If you were Canaanite, you were evil. Like, that's just bad blood going through us.
It's true. The descendants of Abraham were the bad seeds. Like, that's where I first understood the reference. I don't know where it originated, but... so it very easily could have gone that route. And I think isn't the Latin word for semen seed? Isn't it? I think semen means seed in Latin. Anyway, so they very
now
well
we've
could
gone have been Latin. Yeah.
I hope you're right.
Well, semen in English. Sorry. It's still a what do you?
What do they call it? The people that analogy, look up origins of words? A
wordsmith.
No.
Oh come on! It's
damn it.
Enough.
Anyway. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I like that they didn't go the religion route because that happened a lot.
I don't.
God, Travis, let me talk. I like that they didn't go the religion route because that happened a lot, especially with older movies like this. I like that they went with the whole psychoanalysis. I thought it was very interesting. And I agree with everyone. I think that it held up really well. It was great acting, good writing. The ending was drug out farther than it should have. But the movie itself didn't really drag enough to lose interest. Like, I never lost interest. I was pretty hooked the entire movie. Which, with black and white movies, nowadays with modern audience, it's kind of hard to do that a lot of times. So, yeah, I think it still holds up. I thought it was great. And, yeah, I recommend it for sure.
The religious version of this movie is called The Omen.
Yes, there is no
parents who have the
bear. There is no religion in this because you're dealing with science, the thing that murdered religion.
That's what I'm saying.
This is a, I would say, in my own like fundamentalist pull, I'd be like, this is a communist movie, you know, because it's about, you know, it's about eugenics. I mean, if you believe in what the science that this movie's pushing, then you have to seriously look at, well, Jews are greedy. Black people are less intelligent. I mean, if you're going to look at a science fucking list of like, you know, this is what the danger of eugenics, right? Is you can't fucking say, well, it's not nature versus nurture, right? It's not the education people get. It's not, nope, it's in their blood. There's no fixing this. You know, it's like, it's a pretty dismal, scientific belief, if you ask me. I mean, this is why so many atrocities in mankind have dealt with eugenics, you know. But as a movie, it's fucking so goddamn great. I mean, I love that. It's so fascinating because it's written in that play style, right?
Very much.
And this is also probably the same reason I like Woody Allen movies. I like it when a character just talks aloud and you know it's their inner thoughts. But for a movie, it's just interesting to have somebody like, Just sitting there fucking...
Especially Leroy.
Yeah. Oh,
that guy's
awesome.
All inner monologue.
And I think that's the opposite of how we used to make movies versus how we make movies nowadays. Where how we make movies nowadays, everything's just based on how great your fucking picture looks. And back then, it's just like, what? It's going to be black and white. What do you want? I mean, like, you got to have these people say some shit. You know, I think that's more important to movies. And I think that's why this movie... I mean, yeah, it's a little long. What did we say the running time?
2 hours, 9 minutes?
2 hours, okay. So it was long. Yeah. It didn't feel long. It was long. but it still, like, moves. It just moves. There's not a lot of, like, slow moments. There's always conversation going on. There's always something dealing with the story. And, I don't know. This is just one of my favorite movies. I love it. You should all watch it. This is one of those movies you can be like, hey, Grandma, you know, like one of my favorite movies is The Bad Seed, you know, like, you know, talk to some of your elders about this, you know, they probably remember it. And even though the book is so hard to get through, I'm getting through it. But Meg, yeah, I mean, I would even say try to read the book just because you'll get so much more of the idea of William March mostly wrote about psychology and eugenics and shit like that. I mean, this is what people are doing. They're trying to figure out how to fix humans through fucking human intervention, you know, which is scary. That means the death of humans, the death of other humans. So that's why I do think this is one of my favorite scary movies is because...
Whoa.
Just don't like, you know,
does
you don't
that mean
see
it's
many
be
movies.
On your scary movie list?
It might be. I'm throwing it
this
on.
Feels like
on.
A fluid list.
Oh, I know, right? It's very. It's
coming up, but he doesn't even know what the list is for sure.
I'm getting close on it. I completely recommend this movie. Watch it with your mom. Let her know you like good movies too.
There you go.
Yeah, be like, see, Ma?
There you go. All right. So we're going to tell you. Well, Sean's going to tell us, not now. What we're going to watch next week after Travis tells us. That's right. So now you got to stay tuned all the way to the end.
Shit.
We're watching next week. But here we go. Travis's best favorite horror movie.
Stop it, Colin. Favorite.
of all time.
All right, here I go.
You're going to go in
this
reverse
is
order?
This is in no particular order.
No, I want 1 through 10.
I couldn't possibly choose a, you know, a list in order because, I mean, even this list is a changing thing. This is just all I could think of in the past, like, whatever.
You didn't even write it down.
Well, I did, but I forgot it. So I'm going off the top of my head. So, okay, without further ado, In the Mouth of Madness. I love In the Mouth of Madness because it breaks down the realities and shows you the meaning of true horror, H.P. Lovecraft style. I'll go with Dario Argento presents Lamberto Bava's Demons. I love Demons because if you like Dawn of the Dead, it's just that times 100. Demons are good. I like... okay, these are two that like I just throw in constantly. Friday the 13th Part 2, because it added something a little different than the ripping off of Halloween. And I mean, come on, created Jason. You know, the ending where a fucking head is on a table with candles like blew my mind. Like that alone was like, there's a movie in that alone. Like, holy shit, this whole movie hasn't been talking about no fucking like head on a table like. So that movie.
I was gonna say why two. It has the best kills, you think?
Two or? Has the best, like it has the Jason story. Like yeah. Everything else is just Jason killing people, blah blah. Two is the Jason story. Yeah. The fucking meat of the mythology. And Child's meat. Play two, just because if you want to talk about like monsters coming to life, you know, I mean Child's Play two is one of the best special effects movies.
Comes out of that door, slamming the fucking yardstick into his hand, going after the teacher.
Naughty, naughty, Mrs. Kettlebomb, or some whatever fucking her name creepy. Is. Kettleworth, I don't know her fucking creepy. Name. Okay, so what is that, four?
That's four.
Okay, so then I'm going to go with Lucio Fulci's The Beyond.
I knew if you had In the Mouth of Madness,
you have to have the Beyond because I love the breakdown of reality. Down. I mean, that's all we have. All we have is reality. So once you start breaking that shit down, dude, that's pure horror. Suspiria, just because it's beautifully lit. You know, it's got the crazy fucking lighting and the crazy gore and just sound. I mean, that could be, I swear to God, if you put any other soundtrack on Suspiria, it could be so fucking boring. But just because that soundtrack,
especially if you see it genius. Before the Anchor Bay version where they actually turn the volume down.
Did like, they?
I've seen this theatrically.
Oh, it's so loud.
It's loud as
it is fucking
fuck.
Loud, yeah. Dude. That actually sucks. I will never buy that version.
I think it's probably the one you have if you have it.
I don't have it because it's coming out on Blu-ray soon from Synapse,
Synapse,
right?
Putting it out there.
Synapse, yeah. Whatever.
One of them.
Yeah. So what is that, six?
Synapse. Mm-hmm.
Six.
Okay, so then I got to go with Psycho just because Psycho... is just scary. I just remember being a kid. I judge a movie how scary it is. If I'm falling asleep, but I hear screaming and I open my eyes and I'm still shocked by what I see. I'm so tired. I shouldn't care, but I'm still like, oh my God. And that was Psycho for me. I saw it when I was really young. The Wolfman. I think every horror movie has basically been based off of the idea that when people came, like World War II was the last time people were able to, like, not the last time. I mean, it was the first time people were able to live through their dismemberment. You know what I mean? So that's why you have all these disfigured, ugly people walking around.
Well,
people are scared of them. That way, that kind of like, whatever, that feeling is what created the modern American horror movie, right? Disfigured people from war that are not accepted and appreciated by the society they return to. And I think Wolfman does that in a better way than like any other movie, right? Because you don't need an ugly man. You just have the, you know, the dude turning into a wolf and blah, 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 blah. So beautiful movie. Oh my God. Where am I?
We have two left.
That's eight.
Eight.
Yep.
Two left. I am going to have to pick. I was going to pick The Bad Seed. But now you guys called me out on
well,
it.
So
I
feel like
I
got it.
But I love the
it's
bad
It's one of my
scene.
Favorite horror movies.
It is.
Not
it's one of my
top
favorite.
Favorite
it is.
Number
one. My, it is one of my favorites. It drives me crazy. Even though I think it's more sad, but I think that's why I like it. I think it's way more tragic than any other horror movie ever fucking made. Like if I was watching this, I mean, shit, I probably didn't. I mean, I couldn't even help myself here. Like, Like, if I start this movie by myself, I will fucking cry from the beginning to the end. I think it's so tragic. It's like, this is horror. This is horror. It's not the same type of horror as you're used to, like the jump scares and the whatever. But this is the horror. Like, if you actually had to deal with it, this is what you got to deal with.
So it is on your list?
Yeah,
that sounded like you
just said
it. Yeah, I just said it on my list. Okay, what was number 9? I feel like I went through Nine Living Dead.
That was number nine.
That was number nine. It's name one.
Well, I guess I think
last one.
So Nine Living Dead is my last one because once again, you got a beautiful like. It's all about the characters, right? It's all about how these people deal with it. Like every good horror should be about the people, not necessarily just the supernatural or the guy with the knife, right? Mm. And Night of Living Dead is probably like the best when it comes to like any sort of a societal combat.
This is the original, the black and white.
Yeah, for sure. I only talk about black and whites. So yeah, that's my list. Watch it this Halloween. I hope it scares you. I hope you find it interesting. I hope you will write us and tell us if it was shit or not.
Yeah,
shit or not. Yeah. That's a new category within the email.
Travis's horror list is absolute shit.
Or you agree like 100%. We want to know,
motherfuckers.
Yeah, and you've got 1 week to watch all of those movies.
1 week.
My most intense horror movies are Inside, I Spit on Your Grave. Sorry.
No. Shut his mic off.
I know.
You're done.
I can't help it. We need a list of 20.
Yeah.
No more.
But next week, the reason why you have to watch them all is because next week Sean's going to have a whole new list for you when he brings us his pick of
Return of the Living Dead 3.
Holy shit.
This is we've graduated from the summer of sequels to the fall of threequels.
The fall of threequels.
Maybe.
Is that what they call it?
Oh, fall of frequels?
Is that a threequel?
The frequels.
We call the frequels?
There you go.
Frequels.
The fall of frequels. All right.
So there it is. We'll be watching Return of the Living Dead. Is it part 3 or just 3?
I think it's part 3. No, it's 3.
Return of the Living Dead 3 next week on the Saturday night part show.
Sometimes it doesn't.
And until then, ladies and germs, the basement is going dark.